Hi, Vinny.
Hey, Joel. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
I have several things I'm excited to talk to you about. One, you started a business in the last year, and I really want to get into that and what it's about. But first, I wanted to kind of like talk about technology and being a software developer. And specifically, you've got a master's and a bachelor's degree in computer science. And, you know, you have that education. And I was wondering, how does that education prepare you for, you know, your career in software development?
I studied computer science in 1999 to 2003. So at that time, it didn't quite prepare me for career in software development.
There wasn't really an internet even at the, it's all changed radically since then, I would think.
Yes, it did. Yeah, so I studied computer science, and it was a great experience, but it was a little bit tough for someone like me who was new to coding. It seemed like a lot of my classmates, everybody already knew how to code, and I kind of felt a little bit behind. But, you know, even though it was difficult, I got through it. And as I was approaching graduation, I learned that the real world software development wasn't exactly what I learned in computer science in my classes.
They hold that back until you're actually about to graduate. And they're like, actually, the real world might be different than what we've been doing.
Towards my junior year is kind of like when I realized it. So I started, you know, like volunteering for like side projects and nonprofits to kind of like gain some real world experience. Mm-hmm. And also that's when I realized that there's also like a IT focused business degree. And I was like, oh shoot, that's probably what I should have studied.
Right.
But then took some classes there too, that really helped. Computer science, there's a lot of misconceptions about what it is. It doesn't quite prepare you for software development. It's more like a lot of theory.
So how would you describe computer science then? Because I agree, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what computer science is versus the engineering side, perhaps, like if you wanted to like compare the two. But what is computer science?
Computer science, I feel like it's the study of what is a computer. The things we learned was like, how do you build a compiler from scratch or a parser from scratch or a database from scratch, which is all useful to learn like what computers do. But in the real world, we're using computers to build software. So that it's not there in computer science when you're studying it.
Yeah. Have you built a compiler since, like, after you graduate? Have you ever sat down to build a compiler?
No.
I think it's interesting though, because there's a lot of like current technology, like in the web development space, like Babel and you know, other things like that, where people mm-hmm. are really getting down there to the compiler level, and that knowledge is useful. And I know a bunch of people that don't have that formal education background are now kind of, you know, not necessarily scrambling, but trying to learn that theory and understand, you know, how do I build mm-hmm. a compiler or parse an AST or do that sort of thing, which is interesting as well. Yeah. So it can and is useful for sure.
Yes.
But, you know, like my personal practice, I'm mostly what I call like a glue coder. Like I take all the really smart ideas that other people do and then just assemble them into something that works for users.
I'm the same way.
I think, you know, like there's a convergence, whether you go to school or whether you don't, like, you know, if you want to like be employed and, you know, there's only so many research spots available in the world. So the rest of us just are just kind of building things to facilitate commerce and whatnot.
Yes.
You said it was a little rocky because you came into it not, you know, understanding how to code. And you know, I had the same experience. I think it's hard. And I was wondering, you know, when you first encountered it, like how did you overcome, you know, the process of just the general weirdness of being introduced to computer code?
For me, it was, I think, one of the hard things going through college was that it sort of becomes a competition. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm behind, I need to catch up. But I think after a while, I decided to let go of that mentality and just focus on, you know, it doesn't matter what grades are, I'm just going to learn and understand. I think that really helped a lot. It kind of became like a puzzle I was trying to solve, or, you know, like things I want to build. Once I started focusing on that, it became a little easier for me.
I'm reading a great book right now called Mindset that talks specifically about that. Like it's the growth versus fixed, where if it's a game, you know, if it's a contest, mm-hmm. then you're competing against other people, where and that's a fixed mindset. But mm-hmm. if you, you know, consider this just a challenge for yourself and something that you want to learn, it's, you know, that's a growth mindset. And it's like statistically, scientifically proven that mindset leads to more success, especially in like hard situations like that, like in an academic environment. Mm-hmm. You know, people that see it's a contest, I'm going to lose. And then they just quit.
Yeah.
Versus the other way, which I think is, that's probably true professionally too, honestly. Like, that's just like a way to look at life.
Yeah, yeah, definitely agree. Yeah, I didn't think about it that way, but that really changed how I do things now. It's not definitely not a competition. It's just my personal goals and, you know, meeting the requirements of the users. You know, once you prioritize that, it kind of becomes easier.
Yeah, and I love the puzzle aspect. I think that's probably my single favorite thing about this career is that it's, if you treat it as such, it's a constant, interesting puzzle that you get to solve on a daily basis. And, and that part of it is super fulfilling for me anyway.
Yeah, same for me too. Every new framework, everything is kind of like, oh, how do I figure this out? How do I make this work?
Yeah, I've seen a lot, you know, people talk about fatigue, but at the same time, it's really actually kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah, it is fun.
So what are your favorite software tools? What are you using now? Like, what's your favorite stack?
Right now, I'm a big fan of Netlify. I recently used it to launch one of my projects, and it's been great. It lets you, you know, do web hosting, but also lets you build and deploy your projects pretty fast, and also lets you set up like your HTTPS automatically. Everything just works.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Yeah, and I'm in the process of like moving a lot of my projects onto it, so it's one of my favorites right now. Also, Gatsby has been awesome. It's a static site generator, and I don't even know React, but I was able to build, you know, a pretty good website just very easily.
So there's a Create React App, which is the kind of a official tool for scaffolding up your React app. And Gatsby has replaced that for me in general. Like the approach, the static rendering and the GraphQL is really, really neat.
Mm-hmm.
You've been doing this for a while. You said you graduated in 2003. What's changed? Like, what's the big differences or the big shifts in kind of, you know, how we approach these problems? What changed over that time since you've been doing this?
You know, when I was starting out, there was never a focus on, you know, user experience. That's a big thing that has changed, which I'm very glad for. Mm-hmm. I think we never thought about how does the user use this? How do we make their life better? It was always build something and teach them how to use it. That was kind of the mentality for most of my workplaces. And I'm really glad that kind of mentality is changing and we're working on more user experience and like how to make it better for the users.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a big change from what I've seen.
Like in terms of the puzzle aspect of this job, like what's your favorite sort of software challenge? Like what gets you excited when you get to sit down and solve a problem?
For me, it's I think the newness, it really excites me. I know I can't always work on new things. Yeah. That's why I think we have a lot of side projects. I think there are so many different frameworks. There's so many different tools, but everyone has, you know, their reasons for starting it and everything is suitable for certain things. So it's kind of like very interesting, you know, how these creators figure out that this is a good way to go about it for this problem and so on. And for me to like learn it and, you know, figure out which, you know, framework is best for this project versus, you know, another one. So I think like just learning the new thing and trying to apply it for the right problem, I think that excites me a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting too when you combine the, you know, like picking tools with the idea of user experience. I think that, you know, because that's part of it at the end of the day, like UX isn't just, you know, like the visual design, obviously, but it's also, you know, the tools that we use and our ability to address concerns and create features too.
Yes.
What are you working on right now?
Currently, I'm working on Diversify Tech. It is a project that kind of came out of my own need. It's where I'm sharing resources, like jobs, events, and opportunities for underrepresented people in tech. Because a lot of times, you know, there are opportunities out there, but they're shared in like closed networks. And sometimes, you know, when you're new to tech or when you're one of the few people in tech, you're just not aware. So one of the goals with Diversify Tech is to kind of like bring awareness to opportunities for underrepresented people.
With Diversify Tech, how are you bringing awareness? What are the tools that you're using? I don't necessarily mean software tools either. Sorry. I mean, like what kind of, you know, what's your approach in terms of bringing awareness?
So I've sort of been unconsciously building a community. Previous to Diversify Tech, I started a newsletter called Code as Many, which was to help women get into tech. And I've sort of been building a community, and with that community, I kind of figured out some of the things that people need. So using that community to start out with, I'm like expanding that community more and connecting with other networks, other communities, and kind of like bringing awareness in that way.
And there's like a kind of a job placement or, you know, kind of matchmaking service for employers and potential candidates too.
Yes. One of the things I've noticed is that a lot of companies, are working on diversity and inclusion in their workplaces. But some of the newer companies, they're not quite sure how to get started, or they're not aware, that a job description can make a difference in who applies to your job, or if you target only computer science universities, that you may not be aware of other candidates that would be interested. So things like that, I'm trying to help out employers too.
So it's almost like a consulting aspect to the business.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm a big believer that most people want to do the right thing. And when you hear, we need an inclusive and diverse company, I think most people would want that, at the end of the day. But how do they get there and do it in a way that makes sense and actually works and fits the bill? It's probably a hard question for people to solve.
Yes.
So you launched Diversify Tech in 30 days. I watched a Twitter thread that you created, and you're going through, and you actually built the business from the software and the ability to, be a business in a 30-day challenge. And I was wondering what that process was like for you, what you learned from that experience.
So initially, the idea for Diversified Tech, I came up with it last year sometime, and actually it was over a weekend, I built something very minimal and I put it out there to see if people were interested. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of positive reception from it, and it was great. But, I have a job, I have a baby with that. I just did not have the time to work on it more. And then I'm part of a community called Women Make. And in October, I think they wanted to do this 30-day challenge where each of us, our own personal project or work project or business, take that project and launch it in 30 days. It was an amazing experience because I think it really made me focus, figure out a plan for it. What am I going to include, and how am I going to do this? And it was great to also have the support of the community. Mm-hmm. Because all of us were working on, a variety of different things. One of my friends was writing a book. Another person was writing, working on their blog. It was all very different, but we all had this main goal to put something out there. And we also asked each other for feedback and, incorporated it. And it was just awesome to have that support. But actually, at the end of it, we also, all of us launched on Product Hunt. And if it wasn't for the community, I probably would not have thought about doing that. Because I launched, I actually got number 2 most voted product of the day. And I also got a Golden Kitty Award.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. And honestly, I wouldn't have thought about it if it wasn't for this community that, I should do this.
So after that's done, launching is so difficult, I think. Mm-hmm. Ideas are easy, they say, but, the actual execution is the challenge. And since then, since you did that challenge, have you been, keeping it up? And is it something that you continue to work on?
Yes, definitely. I've been trying to grow the community more. And also, finally, I've been trying to start a business for a very long time, but this is my first business where I have actual customers and I'm finally generating revenue. So it's been great that way. So I'm trying to connect with more employers to, help them with their diversity initiatives and trying to get more people hired. Diversity can be approached in so many different ways. Right now, I'm trying to figure out what the best way is. I'm trying different ways and, we'll see how it goes. But so far, it's going well.
What does it mean to, when somebody says that people need to do the work for diversity, what does that mean?
First, kind of realizing that we all have biases and, once after acknowledging that, kind of trying to figure out that maybe we can do something about it. And, it doesn't have to be this major thing, but taking small steps. For example, somebody I follow on Twitter, Tatiana Mack, she said that, hey, here are some simple ways that you can include gender pronouns, for example, include it in your Slack profile or your email signature and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. I just took 10 minutes to make all of those changes. So I think first is being aware that, we have a problem and then working towards some of the inequalities that exist in tech.
Yeah. And it's kind of I feel like representation and just, visibility has been a big and important factor. And I mean, does that make a difference? If we see more people doing this thing and young people see it, and get the aspirations. I feel like that's kind of a part of the overall puzzle.
Yes, definitely. And one of the things I have a newsletter called Code with Winnie, and that's kind of the main theme behind it, is to show women that there are people like them out there, so that it encourages them to think that they can do it too, and they can. And even for me, it has helped a lot to see other women. They're speaking or things like that. It really helps me also too.
Sure, because you're organizing it, but I imagine you're learning and growing through the entire process and meeting people and all, you know, benefit from the community as well, right?
Yes, definitely. For example, I've been invited to podcasts before, but I've never said yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Thank you.
Because I was like, you know, people like me don't do these kind of things, you know, even for speaking for the longest time, I never did anything because I just never saw people like me do it. And I was like, and it really helped, like, for example, Lindsay and Ali, who have been on your podcast, they were like, oh, we've been on Joel's podcast, and it was an amazing experience. I was like, oh, you know, people like me can do this, you know?
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah. So definitely representation matters. Like, seeing people like me, you know, kind of doing more than, you know, the stereotypes say, it really helps a lot.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, it's and doing the work for me has been really considering that. Like, that, I graduated high school in the early 90s and it just wasn't even a topic. And I love that kind of almost as a society, we're kind of growing past that. And we have a long ways to go. But, you know, it's good to me. I think everybody deserves the opportunity to enjoy these lucrative careers and remote work and kind of mm-hmm. like having the puzzles every day to solve. Like, it's I think it's rewarding and want everybody to experience it that wants to.
Yes, definitely.
So I'm really curious about just building a business. And you mentioned, you know, like when you were graduating, you found out there was an IT for business degree that you could have taken. And but you didn't, right? Like, you don't have a business degree and you have had a goal to start a business. And what's that been like? Like, as opposed to, you know, being a software engineer, you know, what's the business side of it like? And how have you approached that? Or how do you think about that? Or maybe what did you learn in the process?
So yeah, I do not have a business background, and it's been an experience to kind of learn a lot of things on my own. Marketing has been a big weakness for me. So
yeah, I know. I feel that one.
I actually discovered the MegaMaker community through a book called Marketing for Developers.
So that's Justin Jackson's. That's his his community, right?
Yes. And it's, you know, things like that. Like, I found different communities to kind of help me with my business. I am also part of a group called Dreamers and Doers, which is for women entrepreneurs. And we do a lot of exchange of information. Like, mm-hmm. I give tech help and they teach me how to do social media marketing, you know, things like that. So it's been a process. It's not something I learned overnight. It's been like the past 3 years. I've been picking up things here and there, like marketing or copywriting, which I'm still trying to figure out.
It feels like a lifelong pursuit. And one thing I'm always amazed at, I think there's a lot of crossover in terms of the puzzle aspects of business and software. Because it's fun and interesting, and you have to figure it out, you know, and there's so many facets to it.
Yes. Yeah, I think sometimes it helps to kind of like look at the data behind it for me, because, mm-hmm. you know, for social media strategy, like, what's working, what's not working, kind of like to see the data behind it. That it, again, it's like a puzzle that I'm trying to figure out what is working, what's not.
So my personal favorite, I don't know if you're familiar with Copy Hackers and their materials, but Joanna Weib puts out amazing work and is one of my favorite places for learning, like, the hard tack writing persuasive copy, which is interesting because once you spend, you know, several years trying to get better in this space, mm-hmm. it affects everything. It kind of affects your communication overall. And like, I feel like I'm always pitching for better or worse. Whenever I'm writing, like, I'll be writing a text message, I'm like, oh, I'm pitching again. it just kind of seeps into your soul. Like, and I think, you know, like, it's like writing software kind of does the same thing.
That's awesome.
So you've been writing a newsletter, Code with Vinny, and I was wondering, why did you choose that format over, you know, kind of maybe a more traditional blog format?
You know, Code with Vinny started actually before Code with Vinny. I used to do online app stores for people, kind of like one-on-one mentoring for people who need. Mm-hmm. And I started seeing that people had the same questions again and again. It was either about salary negotiation or what is the first thing that I do, you know, if I want to get into tech or which programming language should I start with? You know, it was like a very lot of common questions. So I was like, you know, one-on-one office hours is not sustainable and scalable. So let me see if I can reach out to more people and share this knowledge with more folks. So that's why I started the newsletter. And then also I realized that, you know, again, because of lack of diversity in tech, I noticed that a lot of bloggers who are women are not highlighted as much. Mm-hmm. So I started focusing on that too. There are a lot of women bloggers, but you just don't see them a lot. So I started focusing on them and amplifying their work. So it's kind of like, I think I'm trying to do both share information, but also amplify people who are already doing the work. So that's why I chose the newsletter format instead of just blogging.
For me, it's almost more personal, like the style of writing, and it doesn't necessarily have to be. I just kind of feel like I fall into a different mode when I'm writing, writing email versus like writing a blog post. I agree. I wish I did both more. I feel like I always need to be blogging or writing or doing something, like that constant drive to just do something.
Yeah, I mean, that's another reason blogging is a lot more time consuming.
Yeah, it's more formal, I think. It's out there, right? Like it exists in the world. So, you have to polish it more and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So community seems to be a reoccurring theme in the discussion and what you're doing. It's like this idea of building communities. And you mentioned a couple business-related mega makers and dreamers and doers. And I was wondering what other communities you generally recommend to people that are aspiring software developers or software developers.
I mean, Dev.2 is one of my favorite software development communities right now.
Yeah, they're great.
It's a very supportive community. People are receptive. People are, you know, more collaborative, and they give you constructive feedback instead of just, you know, critique, things like that. So the Dev.2 is one of my favorites. And I think I mentioned Women Make is another great community for women who are making products. It's a very like go, go, go kind of community, which really helps to like help with your motivation. And I also love Indie Hackers, which seems to be a lot of software developers plus, you know, solopreneurs kind of group.
I noticed, so Rosie Sherry started being kind of their community liaison over there. And it was a great community before, but now like they have a person that's actively in there. Tunneling, I think is the word, which is a weird word, and I had to look it up. But it's the idea of actually, you know, like getting in there and getting the community to do things and stuff. And I love what they're doing at Indie Hackers. It's such a neat thing. And, you know, because Stripe bought them, but then they fund them and they don't really expect anything. There's no like commercial goal, or they're not trying to profit or squeeze ROI out of it. It's like they're just very well funded and now can grow this community organically. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I love that community. I especially love the stories that founders share, because I think a lot of times we don't get the full story. But with Indie Hackers, I like that they share like, you know, what kind of marketing did they do to get this to work? You know, things like that are very useful when you're working on similar products.
Yeah, it's kind of in the trenches. And I love the crossover. It feels to me like, I don't know, I don't want to say Hacker News because people have a really negative opinion on that, but maybe how it was back when it first started. But, you know, without the goal of, I don't know, because it's about indie hackers, right? It's about bootstrapping businesses. Mm-hmm. It's not about venture capital, which is different and unusual, I think, in the space of building business. Mm-hmm. And my preferred, that's what I love. Like, I love that world. It generally fosters better communities. I think Dev.2 is one of the best, like my current favorite in terms of like software development. I absolutely love what Ben and them have been doing with that. And I think it can be a little overwhelming too. So what's like, how do you recommend people get started on Dev.2?
Dev.2, I think, you know, you can either be just a reader if you want to learn from others. I see some folks kind of asking questions or like kind of bringing up topics that they want to talk about. So that seems like an easy way to get started. And I see a lot of people, you know, getting started with blogging because of Dev.2. You know, they try out a topic, you know, may not be like a huge blog post. They start out with a small topic, and as they get feedback, they write more and more. So I've been noticing that a lot too. I think because the community is supportive, it makes it easier. Like, you know, you don't have to be afraid that people are going to critique you.
Yeah, because they just don't really tolerate any sort of, you can't attack people. You can't be super negative. You know, if you're not going to do that, then you just don't belong here. You can go to Reddit or wherever. And that sort of thing is
a lot. They moderate really well. So, you know, that helps a lot.
Because I generally recommend that folks start their own space. But at the same time, if somebody hasn't blogged at all, if you haven't written anything and published it in the public, I think it's just such an amazing spot. And I know several people that have used that as their first spot to go blog and actually do the thing, which is amazing to, you know, that there needs to be more space like that where people can feel safe to express themselves. Mm-hmm. And speaking of, what do you think, like in terms of like individuals, each of us is an individual, and how do we contribute or help create better online communities?
I think, it helps to be a good listener too, instead of like participating in communities, like listening to our fellow developers or so on, see how we can help them. Or, you know, it seems like a weird thing to suggest, but like being nice and respectful of people and their opinions, you know, accepting that we're not always right about everything, but we should think about others' opinions and see how we can learn from them. I think that kind of attitude helps. I think being open to people who are different, who have different opinions, you know, I think having that kind of attitude helps a lot. And all of the communities that I've mentioned so far, like Mega Makers and Woman Make and Dev.2, I think a common theme they have is like they're all very supportive. And a lot of the times in these communities, I may not be the minority in the group, but I still feel very accepted.
Yeah. So, you know, like, well, I would say that, I mean, the word might be inclusive, right? Like,
yes.
We're listening. And I think it's like a learned skill. We may be, you know, born with it early, though. I have a young child about the same age as yours, and they're little tyrants a lot of the time. So I feel like, like that sort of thing is learned over time. Like accepting others, and it's something you can work on. And it's like an actual skill that you can build. Mm-hmm. Well, Manny, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk to me. I'm glad you've done your first podcast. I hope you consider doing more, because you're awesome. And I think you have a lot to share. And thank you so much for hanging out.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. That's been a great experience. Thank you.
Good to hear. Bye-bye.
Bye.